Okay, very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 26th November 2019, Tuesday. So we are going to start our puja chanting. Let us compose our mind, sadha, virya, then develop the mindfulness. Then we will commence the puja. We will recite them mindfully. Nam mô Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Nam mô Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Nam mô Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Nam mô Quan Sư Hình Bồ Tát. Nam mô Quan Sư Hình Bồ Tát. Nam mô Quan Sư Hình Bồ Tát. Nam mô A Di Đà Phật. Nam mô A Di Đà Phật. Nam mô A Di Đà Phật. Nam mô Mi Lạ Phổ. Nam mô Mi Lạ Phổ. Nam mô Mi Lạ Phổ. Nam mô Bồ Tát Bồ Tát. Nam mô Bồ Tát Bồ Tát. Nam mô Bồ Tát Bồ Tát. Nam mô Địa Tạng Vương Bồ Tát. Nam mô Địa Tạng Vương Bồ Tát. Nam mô Địa Tạng Vương Bồ Tát. Nam mô Phổ Bồ Tát. Nam mô Phổ Bồ Tát. Nam mô Phổ Bồ Tát. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang namassami. Suppatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho sanghang namami. Okay, you can be seated. Then turn to page 1 of your chanting book. We will chant from the Vandana onwards. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Suramiraya macchapamadattana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now we will chant the Patipa Puja, offerings of light. Ganna sarapaditena dipena tamadang sina tiloka dipang sambuddang 不加呀弥陀摩奴当甘达萨巴拉尤提那德佩那行苏冈希那不加耶不加尼扬当不加巴加那摩特曼完那甘达古努佩当耶当格苏玛三塔丁不加呀弥摩尼达斯西里巴达萨罗罗嘿不解密不当不出没那那那不那那没得那车和土摩看不帮马拉亚地亚大一当没有大大亚地为那萨巴王阿迪瓦塞托诺班帝巴尼扬巴里卡皮汤阿努坎邦乌巴达亚巴蒂甘哈托穆特曼阿迪瓦塞托诺班帝巴里巴里卡皮汤阿努坎邦乌巴达亚巴蒂甘哈托穆特曼阿迪瓦塞托诺班帝波迦南巴里卡皮汤阿努坎邦乌巴达亚巴蒂甘哈托穆特曼 Now we are chanting the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of these puja offerings.Significance of offering of light to the Buddha. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma.That causes and doses of the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits.May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One.Strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of oral aspiration. By the power of these merits, born of these offerings,May our spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transferring merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu.Sadhu, Sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect to Pachem. Pudang Pachemi. Damang Pachemi.Sanghang Pujemi. Okay. you can visit that. Then you have half an hour of silent inner awareness meditation. We are off the light. Then I will give you some simple instruction. For those who already know how to meditate, just proceed. For those who still need instruction, you listen. This half an hour of formal meditation is to train your mind to develop the silent mind, which is your true mind, the meditative mind that is just aware. To develop it, you need to understand that our mind originally was already in that state of tranquility, stillness and silence. But the reason why we are not able to be in that state is because according to the Buddha, we do not have the understanding of his teaching. We did not develop initially the five spiritual faculties, because living beings lack the five spiritual faculties. They will develop the opposite five, which is the five mental hindrance. And from the word mental hindrance, these are mental states that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness. That's why they can't develop the meditation. So the lack of the five spiritual faculty is the cause of the heedless thinking mind. If throughout your daily life you do not train your mind, you do not develop the spiritual faculty, the daily mindfulness, especially sati, if you have not stabilized it, you will be heedless. You think a lot. You will have a lot of mental hindrance, because throughout the day, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile, feel something, or think of something, your mind tend to have the habitual tendency to react to sense experience. Either you like that sense experience or you don't like. So like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, they will arise. Then because of your lack of wisdom, lack of equanimity of mind, lack of understanding, you react to them. You stir your mind. That's how the first two mental hindrances of sensual desire and ill will come to be. If throughout the day, every moment, every instant, when you are living life, you stir your mind, means you keep on creating mental hindrance of sensual desire and ill will. And this will prevent you from entering the meditative state, because these are mental hindrance. And when you are so heedless, you create them so often, it becomes habitual tendencies, latent tendency under sayang. And this will keep on arising in you until it becomes so habitual. And when it is habitually heedless, creating mental hindrance, there is no peace. That's why throughout the day you think a lot. Your sankhara activity is very active. When you sit to meditate, you can't meditate. The thinking, the activity of mind, sankhara, they keep on arising. So without understanding, without developing the spiritual faculty, you can't meditate. But the Buddha actually taught us a skillful mean. If before the spiritual faculties are developed, you still want to meditate, then you can still either use a method or technique to anchor your mind, to train your mind so that it develops sati, mindfulness. Without sati, you cannot have the meditative state. Without sati, the spiritual faculty are not there. So sati is very important. Sati is just mindfulness and awareness before the knowing. So the Buddha taught anapanasati. Anapana is in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness of the in and out breath. So you can train your mind to be with the in and out breath without thought. That is anapana sati. The Buddha say breathing in, away. Breathing out, away. Just develop this training. If you have not trained, the mind will wander off very fast. It can never be with the in and out breath. Split second, it is gone. This mind become distracted, lost in thought, wanders off, heedless thinking. That's why anapanasati is a training. Every time it wanders off, bring it back. In front of your nostril, maintain awareness. Just aware, don't do anything. When your breath arises, your awareness will detect it. When your awareness and your breath move as one without thought, means in perfect harmony and synchrony, that is sati. That's why breathing in, aware, no need to know, no need to do anything. Then breathing out, aware. So just train. Every time it wanders off, bring it back. Every time it wanders off, bring it back. Not long, your sati will stabilize. When you are able to anchor your mind to your breathing, you are always within the present moment, because your breath is always within the present moment. And when you are aware of your breathing, the in and out breath, without thought, that is anapanasati. That's how you can train. And as you train, you relax into it, then this anapanasati becomes more and more stable. When it becomes very stable, you will experience a type of peace within. The Buddha called it piti. Piti is a calm state of mind, born of training the mind to be in sati without thought. Then you will experience spiritual calmness, meditative calmness. Then if it's the first time you experience, it can be so nice. You feel like it is a spiritual rupture or rapture. Like your mind rapture into that state of peace. So this is the first byproduct of a peaceful mind that has been trained. Then as you continue to relax into it and develop the anapanasati and let it stabilize, you will become more refined, more quiet. Then you will experience sukhang. Sukhang is meditative blissfulness of mind. The mind is state of become peaceful. It becomes very blissful. Then you may experience long breath. Your anapanasati will be very clear, very stable, very peaceful, very calm. And that spiritual blissfulness is really blissful. But this is not an enlightenment factor. Sukhang is not an enlightenment factor. So you cannot attach. If you attach, you will get stuck inside that. So every time you meditate, you must not look forward to have it. You must just develop it. Let it come naturally. Then after that, continue to relax into it and allow the anapanasati to go on until it becomes very quiet, very still. Then the breath like slow down until finally like little or no breathing. Then that subtle breathing is like you are not breathing at all. Then you realize your mind is very quiet, very still. Then you will experience what the Buddha called pasati. Pasati is tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, the silent mind. That is your true mind. That is your meditative mind. That is the mind that can understand many things. Whatever that is going on within your five aggregate or form of mind, you will understand. Then you can witness all the essential Dhamma arising and passing away within your form and mind. The five spiritual faculty, the five mental hindrances, if there are any, the three evil roots. Then you can see the link of Patijasamupada, the dwelling, dependent origination. You can see them all. Then as you progress, you will also witness the seven factors of enlightenment arising. From sati, it starts to investigate Dhamma, Dhamma Vichaya. Then you will experience a type of calmness, piti, leading to sukhang. Yeah. But before piti, you will develop what they call virya. Virya is a spiritual zeal, spiritual tenacity to meditate. So when you investigate Dhamma, and the Dhamma stand up to investigation, your faith in the Buddha are very strong. That's why this will drive you to develop the second spiritual faculty of virya. And virya is the third enlightenment factor. That's why with virya, you will progress. It will drive you to cultivate sati until the sati is very stable. Then when the sati is very stable, you will experience piti. Piti is the fourth enlightenment factor. Then from piti, you will pass through sukhang. Then you will realize the fifth enlightenment factor, pasati. Pasati is the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, the silent mind. Without thought, just aware. That is the meditative mind that can understand what happens. Upon contact of mind with the sense basis, what happens? After contact, how the mundane mind with its views, opinion, and conditioning, how it input the content of consciousness, how it stir your mind, make your mind reactive, how it end up in emotion, agitation, the lack of peace, how your mind become afflicted, restless, you understand them all. Then when you feel a sensation, how you input the content of consciousness to label it as pain, which is a mental hindrance. Your pain is aversion, dislike for that feeling. And that is the second mental hindrance. Then if it's the very pleasant sense experience like sukhang, if you attach, it becomes sensual desire. You desire it, you want it repeated. That is craving. Craving will lead to suffering, because when you cannot get what you want, suffering arises. So you will see all of this arising and passing away. Then you will witness the Four Noble Truths, the reality of this form that goes the way of nature. That's why the Buddha asks us to contemplate the five daily contemplation. This body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die, for it has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. It's only made up of the four elements, go the way of nature, not permanent, not what you think. It doesn't belong to you. Then you check the aggregate of mind, it's the same. Feeling come and go, perception come and go, mental states come and go, consciousness arise and pass away. You are still around, you didn't die. So how can feeling, perception, mental states, sankhara, and consciousness be you? If they are you, if feeling change, from pleasant to unpleasant, you should die with it. But you didn't die. That's why feeling is dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. Condition arise, it arise, condition cease, it cease to be. Then it keep on changing, transforming. When in the meditative state, when you see all this, you will awaken to the three universal characteristics. Then you will understand the Buddha's teaching very deeply, very clearly. Why he said the five aggregates of form and mind, they are impermanent. When you grasp and cling, it leads to suffering. And because they are impermanent, is not a permanent unchanging entity that you can grasp onto, cling onto, hold onto, and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. This is an illusion. Everything has the universal characteristics of impermanent, leading to the anatta nature. You grasp and cling and want things your way, which is not nature's way. You suffer. That is the noble truth of dukkha. Then the cause of arising of dukkha is craving, attachment, clinging, born of self-delusion. You will see them all. Then when your mind has that wisdom, understanding, and it just let things be and cease, then you can realize enlightenment in the here and the now, nibbana, the cessation of form and mind. This one need wisdom, need insight, need awakening. And this awakening can only happen when you meditate with a silent mind, not with your thought, not with your thinking mind. When you meditate, don't try to know, don't arise the mundane mind. Just silence everything, relax and maintain awareness. Then let the phenomena tell you the story. Let your silent mind awaken the truth. Don't go and look for Dhamma. Dhamma knowledge is not the real Dhamma. Dhamma knowledge is thought form, born of memory, concept, thought. And this is not the true Dhamma. The true Dhamma is beyond thought, beyond mind. Okay, I will let you meditate. Then when the half an hour is up, I will ring the bell. I will stop the instruction now. Okay. You can slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. The ultimate meditation is after you have trained your mind, you have to develop this sati until it's very, very stable. Until the mind enters sati, means the pasati, tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, your silent mind, that one must be very stable. Then finally, when there is no more mental activity or movement, it's just aware. Let that tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, the silent mind, stabilize. Until the mind enters sati. When mind enters sati, your mind is different. Everything your mind experiences is in sati. And when you come out of it, you are fully aware. Your physical movement, activity, every action, movement in the present moment, you are aware. Then this continuous mindfulness will continue even after the meditation. Then whatever you hear in life is in sati. Everything you see, the phenomenal, whether it's physical phenomena, mental or nature's phenomena, is like a flow. We call it the specific phenomenal awareness. Your mind is in sati. Whatever you see, you hear, you smell, you taste, you tactile, you feel or think, the mind that has entered sati will be aware. That's why you see with awareness, you see with sati. Then the hearing, the smell, the taste, the tactile, and the thought activity, everything is in sati. Your awareness becomes very different. Then like the Buddha say, you become heedful. Heedful means, according to Dhamma, Pada verse 23, you are ever mindful, constantly meditative. Means your mind is not only aware, it's ever mindful. Constantly meditative means constantly cultivating noble eightfold path. You combine the two, you become heedfulness. And according to Dhammapada verse 23, the Buddha say, if you are in the state of heedfulness, you are guaranteed enlightenment. That's why Dhammapada verse 23 is very important. The constantly meditative, ever mindful, steadfast one, they will realize the supreme enlightenment, Nibbana, in the here and the now. And Dhammapada verse 21, 22 are the complementary verse. The Buddha says, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die, whereas the heedless are as if dead. So if you don't train your mind to be heedful, spiritually you are as if dead. You don't stand a chance with regards to the spiritual training, the spiritual life. Then verse 22 confirm everything. He said, the wise one, knowing distinctly between the difference of heedfulness and heedlessness, they will intend on heedfulness. And when they do that, they will rejoice in the realm of the Aryans or the enlightened one. So this is the reason why the Appamada Vaga, the Dhammapada verse on heedfulness, verse 21, 22, and 23, these are the three of the 20 verses of Appamada Vaga, and they are the most important. Okay, now turn to page 6. We will chant the invocation to the Devas. In this universe in their entirety, let the devas or deities come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samantha Chiyakawalesu Atra Gachantu Devata Saddhammang Munirajasa Sunantu Sakamokkadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho Vijjacarana sampanno sugato lokavido Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanan buddho bhagavati Svakato bhagavata dhammo Sanditiko akaliko Ehipaseko opanayiko Pachyatang Veditabho Vinohiti Supatipano Bhagavato Savakasango Ujupatipano Bhagavato Savakasango Yaya patipanno bhagavato savakasango Samichi patipanno bhagavato savakasango Yadidang chattari purisa yukani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savakasango Ahuneyo pahuneyo Dakkineyo anjali karaneyo Anuttarang punyaketang lokasati Sadhu Sadhu, Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Tripitaka. Buddhang pujayami. Dhammang pujayami. Sanghang pujayami. Okay. You can be seated. Then we can continue with our second session. Yeah. Okay. We will continue from where we stopped. Right? We are at page 615. We are following this book, right? The Buddha and His Teaching by Venerable Sarada. Oh, sorry, Narada. So we are, I think, more than halfway through the 10 perfections. So page 615. We are on the perfection of metta, loving kindness. Just as a mother protects her only child, even at the risk of her life, even so one should cultivate this boundless loving kindness towards all beings. That is the advice of the Buddha. It is not the passionate love of the mother towards her child that is stressed here, but her sincere wish for the genuine welfare of her children. So if you look at the mother's love, sometimes we can also classify as conditional love, because it is conditioned upon the fact that she believes it's her child, where she gives birth to the child. So that love is very, very powerful. That's why the mother can sacrifice, can do all it can selflessly for the benefit of the child. There is no ulterior motive or selfishness behind. It is just love. So metta is similarly universal love. It's a selfless love that one can offer or give to fellow living beings. That selfless love is very important. So this is the aspect of metta. That's why when the cultivator, the practitioner, or the bodhisattva, when they cultivate metta, their mind is very different. Like the Diamond Sutta that we have gone through. Even the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, the bodhisattva knew that ultimately there is no mark, no mark of a self-cultivating, no mark of life, no mark of Dhamma, no mark of whatever there is within the conditioned world. So when they understand this profound meaning of no mark, then that love is universal love. It understands the conditioned and the unconditioned. So that universal love comes from wisdom, born of clear understanding that everything is not the way it is. But they also understand the conditioned world's wisdom. That is, even though there is no living beings, no mark of a self, no mark of others, but there is such thing as human being, living being, karma. So they will accord and flow. They will do their duty. They will radiate whatever love that is appropriate at any one time. So this aspect is very beautiful. Yeah? Then the other thing about metta, which is not the true metta, is also described. It says, metta is neither carnal love nor personal affection, for grief inevitably arises for both of this kind of love. Metta is also not merely neighborliness, for it makes no distinction between neighbors and others. Metta is not mere universal brotherhood, for it embraces all living beings, including animal or lesser brother and sister that need greater compassion as they are hopeless. Metta is not political brotherhood or racial brotherhood or national brotherhood or even religious brotherhood. Political brotherhood is confined only to those who share similar political views, such as partial brotherhood of Democrats, Socialists, Communists, and so forth. Racial brotherhood and national brotherhood are restricted only to those of the same race and nation. Some nationalists love their race so much that sometimes they ruthlessly kill innocent people, women and children, because they unfortunately are not blessed with blonde hair and blue eyes. The white races have particular love for their white people. The black for the black, the yellow for the yellow, the brown for the brown, the pale for the pale, the red for the red. Others of a different complexion are at times viewed with suspicion and fear. Very often, to assert their racial superiority, they resort to brutal warfare, killing millions by mercilessly raining bombs from the sky above. The pathetic incident of the Second World War are striking examples which can never be forgotten by mankind. Among some narrow-minded people, within the wider circle of their ancient nations, there exists minor circle of caste and class system where the so-called brotherhood or the powerful oppressors, the so-called brotherhood of the powerful oppressors is so limited that the oppressed are not even permitted to enjoy bare human rights merely because of the accidents of birth or class. These oppressors are to be pitied because they are confined to their watertight compartments. Metta is not religious brotherhood either. Owing to the set limitation of so-called religious brotherhood, human hates have been severed without the least compulsion. Sincere, outspoken men and women has been roasted and burned alive. Many atrocities has been penetrated, which baffle description. Cruel war have been waged, which mark the pages of world history. Even in this supposedly enlightened 20th century, the follower of one religion hate and ruthlessly prosecute and even kill those of other faith merely because they cannot force them to think as they do, or because they have a different labor. If on account of religious view, people of different faith cannot meet on a common platform like brothers and sisters, then surely the mission of compassionate world teacher have pitifully failed. Sweet metta transcends all this kind of narrow brotherhood. It is limitless in scope and range. Barrier it has none, discrimination it makes not. Metta enables one to regard the whole world as one motherland and all as fellow beings. Just as the sun sheds its ray on all without any distinction, even so sublime metta bestows its sweet blessing equally on the pleasant and the unpleasant, on the rich and the poor, on the high and the low, on the vicious and the virtuous, on men and women, and on humans and animals. Such was the boundless metta of the Buddha, who worked for the welfare and happiness of those who love him as well as for those who hate him and even attempt to harm and kill him. The Buddha exercises metta equally towards his own son Rahula, his adversaries Devadatta, his attendant Ananda, his admirer and his opponents. This loving kindness should be extended in equal measure towards oneself as towards friends, foe, and neutral ones. Suppose a bandit were to approach a man traveling through a forest with an intimate friend, a neutral person, and an enemy, and suppose he were to demand that one of them be offered as a victim. If the traveler were to say that he himself should be taken, then he would have no metta towards himself. If he were to say that any one of these three person should be taken, then he would have no metta towards them. Such is the characteristics of real metta. In exercising this boundless loving kindness, oneself should not be in awe. This subtle point should not be understood. For self-sacrifice is another sweet virtue and egolessness is yet another higher virtue. The accumulation of this metta is the hidden, is the identification of oneself with all beings, sabbesata, sabbetata. Making no difference between himself and others, the so-called I is lost in the whole. Separatism evaporates, oneness is realized. There is no proper English word for this graceful Pali word or Pali term, metta. Goodwill, loving-kindness, benevolent and universal love are some of the words suggested as the best renders. The antithesis of metta is anger, ill-will, hatred or aversion. Metta cannot coexist with anger and vengeful conduct. The Buddha said hatred is not at peace through hatred. Only through love alone can hatred cease. Metta not only tends to conquer anger, but also does not tolerate hateful thought towards others. He who has metta never thinks of harming others, nor does he disparage or condemn others. Such a person is neither afraid of others, nor does he instill fear into any. A subtle indirect enemy assails metta in the guise of a friend. It is selfish affection, term pema, for unguarded metta may sometimes be assailed by lust. This indirect enemy resembles a person who lurks afar in the jungle or hill to cause harm to another. Greed springs from affection, but not from metta. The delicate point should not be misunderstood. Parents surely cannot avoid having affection towards their children, and children towards their parents, husband towards their wife, and their wives towards their husband. Such affection is quite natural. The world cannot exist without mutual affection. The point is to be clarified here is that unselfish metta is not synonymous with ordinary affection. A benevolent attitude is the chief characteristic of metta. He who practices metta is constantly interested in promoting the well-being of others. He seeks the good and the beautiful in all, but not the ugliness in others. Attendant blessing of metta. He who practices metta sleeps well, sleeps happily. As he goes to sleep with a light heart free from hatred, and naturally he falls asleep at once. This fact is clearly demonstrated by those who are full of loving kindness. They are fast asleep immediately on closing their eyes. So if you got insomnia, go and cultivate metta. Then you will sleep well. There is a sutta, they call it Metta Sutta. So the benefit of Metta Sutta is you sleep well. Without metta in your heart, the evil root, the negative tendency, they tend to surface. And because of that, the karmic conditioning will prevent your mind states from having this universal love or metta. Number two, as he goes to sleep with a loving heart, he awakes with an equally loving heart. Benevolent and compassionate person often rise from bed with smiling face. Even in sleep, loving people are not perturbed by bad dreams, as they are full of love during their waking hours. They are peaceful in their sleeping hours too. Either they fall into deep sleep or they have pleasant dreams. He becomes dear to human beings as he loves others. So does others love him. When a person looks at the mirror with a smiling face, like I teach you how to read it, a radiant smile, a similar face will greet him. If on the contrary, he looks with a weary face, he will see a similar reflection. The outside world reacts on in the same way that one acts towards the world. One full of fault himself is apt to see the evil in others, the good he ignores. An English poet, Bolton Hall, has put it beautifully. I look at my brother with microscopic criticism. As I said, how coarse my brother is, I look at him through the telescope of scorn. And I said, how small my brother is. Then I look at the mirror of truth. And I said, how like me my brother is. Why should we see the ugliness in others when there is evil in the best of us and good in the worst of us? It would be a source of pleasure to all if we could see the good and the beautiful in all. So this one brings about condition for me to add in something. If you want to have good mind state, you must know how to visualize your smile. You can visualize yourself radiating a radiant smile. Then when you see something, you can actually, like metta, you wish for your understanding. May I see with the eye of love. You understand? Whatever you see, there is love. Then no more negativity. So the whole world, you come to perceive them through your senses. So whatever you see, you hear, you see with the heart, you see with love, you see with joy, then there will be no negativity. So all these are skillful means to develop metta, to develop love, to develop wholesomeness. Then as you practice and cultivate this mind state more and more, especially when you radiate metta, very powerful, they are very powerful. I did them in my early days in 1971, then when I was in the uni also, 1975 until 1979. If you really develop metta, it's very powerful, very, very powerful, especially the 10 directional metta radiation. How many of you have done that? You haven't. You should go and get hold of the book, Metta Sutta. Not the chanting one. The chanting Metta Sutta is different. There is this loving kindness meditation, the 10 directional. May all beings within the eastern direction be well and happy, well and happy. I remember last night at home, middle of the night, I read this metta until the metta very, very soothing flow out from my heart. And it's very, very different. That time the heart is full of metta, joy. Then whomever I see, the joy inside, the smile, the metta. Then that time I tested the metta. When I was walking in the street, I radiated his metta. Then very funny. At first was this lady in front. He was lost. She was lost in thought, thinking. I think she like got problem. She was thinking. And you can see that she is lost in thought, thinking. Then her head, she didn't look at anybody. She just like talking to herself, thinking deeply, trying to solve her problem. And as I read it, this metta, very funny. Suddenly, near me, in front of me, he just lift up her head. Then because I was in this metta state of joy and smile and love, she also smiled back to me. Then I can see her like very confused, why she did that. Then I thought maybe in front easier. So next time, a few days later, there were conditions. I tried somebody in front of me walking ahead. Means I am behind. It happened to be another lady again. So I radiated this metta towards her. And you know what happened? All of a sudden, within a few seconds, she turned her head. Then she looked at me, she smiled. Then she also feel funny. Why she did that? Because the heart can feel. Yeah. The consciousness can feel. That's why it's very powerful. Then I told you about the Melbourne story. Yeah? The dog. The Australian guy, he got this very fierce dog, very tall dog. I was radiating metta in the morning. And when I radiated this metta, it was so strong at that time, very powerful. I can feel the nature, the tree, the plants, the devas, everything just radiated. Then all of a sudden, a few hundred meters away here, there was this guy, Australian guy, taking the dog for a walk. That dog, all of a sudden, full of joy, you know, just like speed off. So the rope, there's a rope that tied the dog to the owner, suddenly went off his hand. Then he was, that dog was running towards my direction. The owner panicked. The owner thought the dog was going to attack me, you know. But then my nature can sense the joy in that dog, you know. Then I looked from far, then I saw the dog. Very, very swift and very fast. Like I don't call it just running. It's like very swift, it comes. Like a horse like that. Then I saw the joy, I can feel the joy in that dog, you know. Then the fur all coming out. Yeah. Then a few moments later, I saw the tail wag. The moment the tail wag, then I confirmed. I knew already, this dog can feel the metta. And he came all the way, approached me, stopped there, panting. Then I held my hand over the dog's head. He was as tall as me. That dog was very big. Then the owner came. The owner looked at me. He said, "Who are you?" He said, "I thought my dog was attacking you." I said, "Don't worry, good dog." Then after that, he wants to take the dog away. The dog refused to follow him. Then I sent something. Then I spoke to the dog. I said, "Don't worry." I said, "Sadhu, go." And then the dog followed him. Then on the way back, again the dog came. But this time the owner knew the dog liked me. So metta, when it's really developed, when it's really developed very well and very stable, there is a very soothing metta force or energy coming out from your heart. No words, it just flows. And that one is a universal metta. Non-living beings. Sorry. Non-humans. Non-humans. Animals. They can feel them. Because it's very strong, very powerful. So this particular perfection, metta, can be developed. And initially you can use your thought. There are three phases of metta. First phase is you verbalize it. Verbalize it is like you just use words to read it. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy. Well and happy. So there is this verbalization. Then the second stage is you can will it out. Will it out. Then you can like develop the metta stronger. When you read it, may I, this body and mind of mine. You must feel your entire body and mind. Let the feeling goes in. The feeling of metta, love, the well-being. Because you read it, well and happy. So you must feel the well-being and happiness, the joy within your body and mind. Each and every cells within your body and mind, you feel it. Then you radiate it out. Then when you already have metta, you can wheel it out to others, to the environment, to the non-humans, to animal. That is the second stage. So most people can do until the second stage. The third one is straight from the heart. No word, nothing. It's just that metta come out. Yeah. That one is very different, very powerful. Yeah. That one is straight from the heart. It is like a very soothing flow of metta just come out. You can feel it coming out. And as you speak, the metta is in your heart. Everything that flow out is that metta force. Yeah. Then you can just silent. And the whole metta force just radiate out like that. Mm. So if you really develop it well, I remember I was doing the 10 direction one. I did it for 6 months. Oh, that's very powerful at that time. Then I knew what metta was. Yeah. So this particular perfection is something quite interesting if you know how to develop it. You can give it a try. Then the benefits of metta is wonderful. Yeah. Not only you sleep well, it seems they say when you have loving kindness, You cannot die because of people's poison arrow or gun or people shoot you or whatever. You won't. You won't. The metta will protect you. Yeah. So this metta is like a very powerful virtue. Yeah. Because of your love. Your love for all things, all beings. Its effect is there. Mm. I remember there are more than 10 great benefits if you cultivate this loving kindness meditation. Yeah. They call it metta bhavana. Metta bhavana. Hmm? Not the chanting one. Chanting one is metta sutta, where you chant the sutta on metta. The sutta on metta is also very good. But the sutta on metta is not just loving kindness alone. That sutta was delivered by the Buddha. It's like instruction to the non-humans to become virtuous being, enlightened being. What must you do? They are all in the Metta Sutta. So if you read through the Metta Sutta, it's very important. You must be skillful in what. It's quite close to the Mangala Sutta. The sutta on blessing, the highest blessing and all those things. So all these are important, essential Dhamma that the Buddha taught. Okay, I will read on. Okay, number 5. He who practices metta is dear to non-humans as well. This one is very true. Animals are also attracted to him. Radiating their loving kindness, ascetic live in wild forests amidst ferocious beasts without being harmed by them. Owing to his power of metta, he becomes immune from poison. Now, this is the one I was trying to tell you. Immune from poison and so forth, unless he is subject to some inexorable karma, means very heavy karma, but not lightly. Yeah. As metta is a constructive, healthy force, it has the power to counteract hostile influence. Just as hateful thoughts can produce toxic effect in the system, even so loving kindness thought can produce healthy physical effect. It is stated that a very generous and devout woman named Supiya, who had a wound in her thigh, was healed on seeing the Buddha. The peaceful thought vibration of the Buddha and the woman combined to produce this salutary effect. When the Buddha visited his birthplace for the first time, his son Rahula, who was only 7 years old, approached him and spontaneously remarked, "O ascetic, even your shadow is pleasing to me." The child was so much dominated by the Buddha's metta that he deeply felt its magnetic power. Invisible deities or devas protect him because of the power of metta. Ah, this is very true. That's why sometimes when we travel, it's like we are very well protected, very blessed. It's because we share merit, we transfer merit, and we radiate loving kindness and metta. Then metta leads to quick mental concentration. This one is true because metta is one of the four Brahma Vihara. It can lead to jhanas, concentration of mind. But if you go in through metta, it's very safe because there is loving kindness. Then you can go into continuous absorption, and your metta is very powerful at that time. I still remember in the early days when I did that continuous mindfulness absorption meditation. But finally, you have to release out the concentrated mind to go back into daily mindfulness to do the four foundation of mindfulness, satipatthana. Without releasing it out, you cannot develop the true wisdom, the Dhamma wisdom, born of the direct seeing, the silent mind awakening to truth, awakening to the three universal characteristics of impermanent suffering state and non-self, or empty nature or existence. Then number 8. Metta leads to quick mental concentration that only we have control. As the mind is not perturbed by hostile vibration, one-pointedness can be gained with ease. With mind at peace, he will live in the heavenly realm of his own creation. Even those who come into contact with him will also experience that bliss, that metta. Metta tends to beautify one's facial expression. The face, as a rule, reflects the state of mind. When one gets angry, the heart pumps faster, the blood twice or three times faster than the normal rate. Heated blood rush up to the face, which then turns red or black. At times, the face becomes repulsive to sight. Loving thought, on the contrary, gladdens the heart and clarifies the blood. The face then presents a lovable appearance. It is stated that when the Buddha, after his enlightenment, reflect on the causal relationship or relation, patthana, his heart was so pacified and his blood so clarified that rays of different hue, such as blue, yellow, red, white, orange, and a mixture of the emanated, of this emanated from his body. A person imbued with metta dies peacefully, as he harbors no thoughts of hatred towards any. Even after death, his serene face reflects his peaceful death. Such a person with metta dies happily. He will subsequently be born in a blissful state. If he has gained the jhana or ecstasy, he will be born in the Brahma realm, then the power of metta. So these are the descriptions, which are very good. For those who have not done metta, bhavana, you should go and try, it's very good. You can meditate very easily when you have metta, because the mind become like easily collected. Yeah, that metta force will make you very calm. The inner peace will bring about inner well-being. And these are the first two great benefits of meditation. Inner peace leading to inner well-being and having love within your heart. And that metta radiation is very soothing, very beautiful. The vibration is very positive. The animals can feel you. The non-humans can feel you. The devas can feel you. Everything can feel you. Then all these negative things cannot come near, cannot harm you. You are very different. You can feel your vibration is so different. And you are so kind, so loving. Everything you do reflect that metta mind state. You should try it. It's really, really, very marvelous, very beautiful. Okay, power of metta. Besides this inevitable worldly blessing, metta possesses a magnetic power. It can produce a good influence on others, even at a distance, and can attract others to oneself. This is very true. Very true. That's why I told you I tried. And these are not that far away. Yeah. But people are lost in their thought, no? And yet they can turn around. And they can, like, without themselves understanding why they do that. No? Because that metta force touch them. Yeah. And the animals also, they can feel. And when they feel, there's a lot of joy. Then even the animals, like the tiger, the elephant, all, they become very calm. And they like to be near you. Yeah. So a lot of things, metta has such power. Yeah. And the whole environment, the forest, the tree, the stream, your positive energy has a great influence on them. And that metta force, that vibration is so soothing, so beautiful. Once when the Buddha visited a certain city, many distinguished nobles came to welcome him. Among them was a noble man named Roja, who was a friend of Venerable Ananda. Seeing him, Venerable Ananda said, "It is very kind of you, Roja, to have come to welcome the Buddha." "No, Venerable Sir, it's not out of my reverence towards the Buddha that I have come to greet him. We agree among ourselves that whoever would not go to greet the Buddha would be fined 500 gold coins. It is through fear of the fine that I have come here to welcome the Buddha," replied Roja. Then Venerable Ananda was slightly displeased or unhappy. He approached the Buddha and implored him to preach the Dhamma to Roja. The Buddha instantly radiated metta towards Roja and retired to his chamber. Roja's body was saturated with metta of the Buddha. He was electrified, so to say, with the magnetic power of the Buddha's irresistible love. Just as the calf would run after its mother, he ran from cell to cell in the monastery inquiring where the Buddha was. The monk directed him to the Buddha's chamber. He knocked at the door. The Buddha opened it. In he went, saluted the Buddha, hearing the doctrine, and he became a convert, a Buddhist. Talking about this particular example, it reminds me of a monk. This monk is very good. I think some of you all know him. Ajahn Ganha. You heard of Ajahn Ganha? Like the Laughing Buddha. He is also from Thailand. He is the niece of Ajahn Chah, I think. Was it Ajahn Chah? I forgot already. He is the niece of one of the famous master in Thailand. And he happened to go for Tudong. You know what is Tudong? Every year he go. And he is a very, very special monk. He when he smiles, he's really like the Laughing Buddha, Maitreya. And he's also with a tummy. And his metta is very, very powerful, very strong. The most powerful I have ever met, seen. He always speak this Thai word, chai. Chai is heart. Chai di means good heart. Chai di, chai sabai, sabai. He always like that. Then whomever you see, you can see the metta in him. And do you know how he relieved metta? He has a hand. His hand is like that. So I was told by one of my friends, Lao Tan. He was carrying Achanganha and his disciple, to Penang, if I'm not wrong. And on the way back, middle of the night, I think on the highway, kena stopped by the traffic police. So this Lao Tan, he thought sure someone already show IC everything. So the police was writing and was then all of a sudden very funny, suddenly the police felt something, then look at the back of the van, then he decided not to write the summon. He said, okay, you can go. Boleh pergi. Boleh jalan. Then after that, he doesn't know what happened. Then the disciple of Achanganha laughed. He said, Achanganha sent metta. His metta was so strong. Until the police didn't issue the summon. Then later, they went to Cameron Highland. We all, three of us, supposed to take turn to fetch them and their disciple. So the Cameron Highland trip, I was the one that fetched Achanganha and the disciple up. Then when I was there, we were making all this dana offering, a lot of people like up. And Achanganha liked me because he know I'm a cultivator, I have the Dhamma also. Then I can feel him, he can feel me. So when I make offering, I was paying respect. Then I saw his hand. He put it down here. That metta was so strong. It's like in the waterfall. The whole metta went into my whole body. Enveloped the whole body. I can feel the whole metta inside me. Then I also have metta. The whole thing like engulfed inside. Then after that, I had this joy. I rejoice and I say, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And he also smiled. He keep on smiling. Then I also smile. That's why when you can meet up with people who have metta, real metta, it's really that whole metta energy can engulf your whole body, like what is described here. The Buddha radiated his metta or sent his metta to this Ruja, this nobleman, the Ruja. He felt the whole thing engulfed, then he's like attracted to the Buddha. He went and looked for him. But for me, it's different because I have the understanding. So I can feel it. And the whole thing engulfed my whole body. And I knew how it can actually affect people. And if you are sensitive, mindful, you can feel them. All these metaphors, they are very soothing, very different. So this part is for your info, because there is condition to share. Okay, we go on. Yeah, at page 625, last paragraph. Oh, sorry, no. 624. On another occasion, an intoxicated elephant, these are also very true, they try to harm the Buddha. They intoxicate the Buddha. There is a chanting on this. The name of the elephant is one. There is a name one. Quite a long name. Okay, I read first. On another occasion, an intoxicated elephant was driven towards the Buddha in an effort to kill him. The Buddha calmly radiated his love metta towards the elephant and subdued it. A beautiful story may be cited to show how the Bodhisattva as a boy extended his boundless metta when his own father ordered him to be killed. Young though he was, the Bodhisattva thought to himself, here is the golden opportunity for me to practice my metta. My father stands before me. my mother, my good mother is weeping. The executioner is ready to chop off my hand and feet. I, the victim, am in the center. Love I must, all the four, in equal measure, without any distinction. May my good father not incur any suffering because of this ruthless act. May I become a Buddha in the future. In one of his previous births, a Bodhisattva was once practicing virtue of patience in the royal park. The king and drunkard, meaning to test his patience, ordered the executioner to beat him and cut off his hand and legs. Still, he practiced patience. The impatient king kicked him in the chest, lying in a pool of blood, almost on the verge of death. The Bodhisattva blessed the king and wished him long life, saying that men like himself never get angry. A bhikkhu is expected to practice metta to such an extent that he is forbidden to dig or caused to dig the ground, lest insect and other minute creature dies. The high standard of metta expected from a bhikkhu can be understood by the following admonition of the Buddha. If bandits were to sever your limb with a two-handed saw, and if you entertain hate in your heart, you will not be a follower of my teaching. Such enduring patience is extremely difficult, but that is the lofty ethical standard of the Buddha expect of his followers. The Buddha himself has set the noble example. As an elephant in the battlefield withstand arrow shot from the bow, said the Buddha, even so will I endure abuse. Verily, most people are undisciplined. This chaotic, war-weary, restless world of today, where the nations are arming themselves to their teeth, frightened of one another, where human life is endangered by nuclear weapons, which may be released at any moment, is sorely in need of this universal loving kindness, so that all may live in one world in perfect peace and harmony, like brothers and sisters. Is it practically possible to exercise metta when one is threatened with devastating bomb and other destructive weapons? What do you think? Yeah, can still have metta. Anybody want to try to answer this question? Anybody? Take the mic. Anybody? Try. Actually, let PG try. Actually, nothing die. Who die? What die?
Brother Teo, a lot of times we may have, in theory we say that, okay, we should love all beings. But when you are threatened and if you don't have the
Dhamma.
Yeah, the Dhamma and the overall love, so much so that you can forsake yourself and your loved ones, you won't be able to feel the...
Yeah. It's not easy.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy.
Yes, very good. Sadhu. You see, when it comes to putting into practice the teaching, the Dhamma, unless you have developed the penetrative understanding, the wisdom, you cannot live it. It cannot become a living reality. All this can only become a living reality when you have the Dhamma. When you really have awakened to it, then your mind is very different. Actually, nothing die. No one die. And what is death? You don't need to worry about death. Who die? What die? Nothing die. And to die is very easy. Separation of consciousness from the form. our form and mind is very fragile and it's very easy to die. That's why my teacher say, if you know how to die before you die, you will have the wisdom. But how can you die before you die? Huh? Can or not? Huh? How can you die before you die? Actually, when you realize Nibbana, it's like you die, you know, your consciousness, everything ceases, stop. You realize the unconditioned. Yeah. That's why you must know how to die before you die. When you die of all the delusion, ignorance, and the defilement, you actually die. Then, through that death, you will become enlightened, awakened. But that which become enlightened or awakened is not you. That is the form and mind. This vehicle and tool that is karmically conditioned for us to come to this world, and this one with the wisdom connected after you awaken, is enlightened. But it's not you. So you have to develop that understanding. The form and mind is dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena. It is an impermanent entity. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling on to, hold on to, and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. No such thing. That's why without this understanding, there is this fear of dying. Fear of being harmed. That's why the question is, when you know you are going to die, either due to nuclear bomb or whatever, can you still maintain the inner peace, the inner calmness, the understanding and weakness the moment? That's why my teacher Ajahn Yantra, he always say, you must laugh at the dead. You can understand, huh? Laugh at the dead. Laugh at the dead. Before you die, when death is approaching, you smile, you laugh. Because you understand nothing dies, understand? Or? The mind will go into cessation. You understand nothing dies. No more avijja, no more ignorance to condition, rebirth. Everything just ceases. And no more. That's why he can laugh at the dead. He know how to die before he die. So these are all the understanding that you can develop. Okay, so that part we finish. Yeah? So we move on. The chaotic, oh, this I have read through, second paragraph. When human life is endangered by nuclear weapon, which may be released at any moment, is solely in the need of this universal loving kindness, so that all may live in one world in perfect peace and harmony, like brothers. This one we have done, we have gone through. Then, is it possible, or practically possible, to exercise metta when one is threatened with devastating bomb and other destructive weapon? Oh, this one also we have done. So thank you for the sharing, PG. Well, what can powerless people do when bombs rain from above? Can they avert such a catastrophe? Buddhist metta is the only answer to such deadly weapon or bombs, where one is faced with inexorable death. If all warlike nations could be prevailed upon to substitute this spiritual metta for the destructive weapon of materialism and rule the world, not with might and force, but with the right and love, then only would there be genuine peace and happiness in this world. Leaving the almost unpractical major issue aside, it is advisable to be concerned with oneself and the rest of mankind in cultivating this sweet virtue of metta to the best of one's ability. Okay, here he teaches you how to practice metta, loving kindness, metta bhavana. Oh, this one is good. If they teach you here, you can follow this one. But this one is not complete. You should go and look up Google metta bhavana. I think there are two versions. One is a short version. The other one is a longer one, the 10 directional one. And also 10 type of beings. 10 directional and 10 type of beings. I think that one is in the Visuddhimagga, I think. If I'm not wrong. How to practice metta? A few practical hints are given below to practice this loving kindness meditation. Metta should be practiced first towards oneself. In doing so, a person should charge his mind and body with positive thought of peace and happiness. He should think how he could be peaceful, happy, free from suffering, worry, and anger. He then becomes the embodiment of loving kindness. Shielded by loving kindness, he cuts off all hostile vibration and negative thought. He returns good for evil, love for anger. He becomes ever tolerant and try his best not to give occasion for anger to any. He himself beaming with happiness and love. He injects happiness into others, not only inwardly, but also outwardly, by putting his metta into practice in the course of his daily life. When he is full of peace and is free from thought of hatred, it is easy for him to radiate loving kindness towards others. What he does not possess, he cannot give it to others. Before he tries to make others happy, he should first be happy himself. He should know the way and means to make himself happy. He now radiates his loving kindness towards all beings, his near and dear ones, individually and collectively, wishing them peace and happiness and freedom from suffering, disease, worry, and anger, diffusing his thought of metta. Towards the relative, friends, he radiates them also towards neutral people, just as he wished for the peace and happiness of himself and his near and dear ones. Even so, he sincerely wished for the peace and happiness of those who are neutral to him, wishing them freedom and from suffering, disease, worry, and anger. Finally, though, this is somewhat difficult, he should radiate his metta in the same way towards those who are inimical to him, means his enemy. If by practicing metta he could adopt a friendly attitude towards those thought to be inimical towards him, his achievement would be more heroic and commendable. As the Buddha advises, amidst those who hate, let him live free from hate. Starting from himself, he should gradually extend this metta towards all beings, irrespective of creed, race, color, and sex, including dumb animals, until he had identified himself with all, not making no distinction whatsoever. He merged himself in the whole universe and is one with all. He is no more dominated by the egoistic feeling. He transcends all form of separatism, no longer confine himself to watertight compartment, no longer influenced by caste, race, nationality, religious prejudice. He can regard the whole world as his motherland and all as fellow beings in the ocean of life, samsara. Okay, we finish this part. But the one on metta bhavana is better. That one I remember. Initially, you had to build up this metta. You had to reflect on metta. like a mother's love towards his only child and all those things. Yeah? Then you keep on radiating this metta, reflecting on this metta, until this metta force is so powerful. To radiate metta, you must have metta, true or not? Yeah, I remember the Metta Sutta mentioned, the Metta Bhavana mentioned, you must have metta until it's like overflow, ooze out from the whatever pot or jar that you have developed the metta. From your heart means it overflow out from your heart. Yeah. Then they have a lot of very good and very nice, what they call, wordings. You give me a minute. I think I still have that book, if I'm not wrong. I printed that book last time. I printed a few thousand copies for free distribution. But after I developed it in the early 80s, I felt that it is a very good book. That's why I must print it. There are two books I remember. You give me a minute, I get it. This two book. This is only the photostat copy left. We were all given out. Then I decided to make some photostat. Then I can't even find it. Every time I meet people who need, I just give. Then this one, my wife found it in the store. So this one, I think, must go and make some copies. You listen to this one, it's very good. I underline them. This particular metta is very good. Metta Bhavana. meditation on metta. The Pali word metta is best rendered as spiritual love, since it means the compelling mood which lovers have, or which a mother has for his only child. Love is a multilated term because of its common usage. It implies grossly sensual feeling. Buddhist scholars hesitate to use it for this reason, yet the sublimest of moods implied in love invest this term with an aura that fits in superbly with implication of the Pali word metta. Other words like loving kindness, friendliness, amity, goodwill, etc., benevolence, are weak, but they don't have the force which metta has. You listen, eh? Metta, when well developed, is a consuming flame that purifies all mental defilement. This is very true. Very, very true. I repeat, eh? Metta, when well developed, is a consuming flame that purifies all mental defilements. Just as with her own life, a mother shed from harm her only child, even so, let all embracing love be thine. Undoubtedly, this implied consuming flame of a mother. Here, it is no idealized love, but the ideal love which is pure, full of will and safety. The mother gave her own life to protect her child implies the love that love only give and never want anything in return. Seeking or requesting for the welfare and happiness of others imply metta. To promote self-interest is a primordial motivation. When this is reversed as to promote others' interest and happiness, not only this basic urge is sublimated, but the mind itself is turned universal as to contain in it the interest of all. And that way does one promote one's well-being in the best possible manner. Then, matono bhava, mitesa bhava, iti metta. Love is the protective and immensely patient attitude of the mother. Mother forbears all the limitation of a child and ever protects despite all misdemeanor. Love is also the attitude of a friend wanting to give the best to his friend, promoting well-being will. If these modes and attributes are sufficiently cultivated through a specific mode of mental development or culture of mind, the result is the acquisition of a tremendous healing power which preserves, protects, and cures. Lord Buddha projected powerful thoughts of love or metta, the impact of which is so immediate and overwhelming that by the time the brute neared the Buddha, it was completely tame, as though a drunkard wreck has suddenly become sober by the magical power of a spell. The tasker, it is said, bow down in reverence in the way trained elephants do in a circus. Venerable Ananda, the Lord's attendant, was so deeply concerned about the Buddha's safety that he ran in front of the Buddha to shield him, but the Buddha told him to stand aside, since the protection of metta itself is quite sufficient. There are various methods of practicing loving-kindness meditation. A few methods will be discussed as found in the sutta. Yes, Visuddhimagga, just now I told you, is correct. Vimuttimagga, Patisambhidamagga, as also other canonical and commentarial source, the Karaniya Metta Sutta combines system of metta meditation found in all these sources. The wide range that metta covers can be deduced from all those various usages as a paritta, a protective mystical formula, as a therapy with psychiatric applicability, as a meditation for the culturing of mind leading to spiritual emancipation. Besides, there are specific metta application as meditation therapy for specific cases of mental illness and to solve specific problem. The historical setting in which Metta Sutta was propounded by Lord Buddha amply proves the spiritual and empirical validity of the wonderful method of mind culture. And this metta, I have applied it to myself and also to help others. There are many people with depression, panic attack. A lot of them say they cannot sleep. There is so much fear. They panic. They cannot walk. They cannot sleep. It was so bad. And finally, I told them to redeem metta, ask for forgiveness, then listen to Metta Sutta and chant. They recovered within less than a month. And a lot of other things can happen if you understand. Then method one, sit down in a comfortable posture, keeping the eye closed in a quiet place where there is a shrine, a room, a park, or any place providing silence. Can be in your room. This one you listen. Repeat the word metta a few times and mentally conjure up its significant love, being the opposite of hatred, opposite of resentment, malevolent, impatient, pride, arrogant, etc. And as a profound feeling of goodwill, sympathy, kindness, promoting the happiness and well-being of others. Now visualize your own face in the happy and radiant mode. Every time you see your face in the mirror, see yourself in the happy and radiant mode and conjure yourself in this mood during meditation. A person in this happy mode cannot become angry or harbor negative thought and feeling. Having visualized yourself in this happy frame, now charge yourself with the thought, may I be well and happy. May I be friendly and loving towards all, not harboring any dislike, prejudice, or antipathy towards anyone, wishing everybody well-being and promote everybody's will and happiness. This part you learn, then your metta very powerful. Whomsoever I look at, may I look at with the eyes of love. Whomsoever I speak to, may I speak with the words of love. Whomsoever I think about, may I imbue them with the thought of love. In this way, as the cultivator suffices himself with the positive metaphors of love, he becomes like out to a filled vessel, its content ready to overflow in all directions. This is how you develop it. And it can be done. I remember I did it. That's why the metta can flow out. Next, visualize your meditation guru, if living. If not, some other living guru or reverend person. See them in a happy frame and project the thought, may my master, then you repeat. Then after that, to your parents, to your teachers, elders, and your neighbors, and spread on each one of them the thought of spiritualized love intensely in the manner mentioned above. Then visualization must be clear and the thought radiation must be wheeled out. This is the second stage. Hurriedly visualizing and just wishing perfunctorily or mechanically will be of little avail, means like parroting, not much use. It will be an intellectual pastime that is thinking about metta. It must be clearly understood that to think about metta is one thing, to radiate metta is another thing. Then actively protecting the will force of metta is quite another thing. Actively projecting. It will be noted that this one you don't worry. They always say they recommend you only radiate to the living one and not the dead one to be visualized. The reason one is the dead one have changed the form. will be out of focus of metta projection. The object of metta is the living beings always. And the thought force will become ineffective if the object is not there. Don't believe this. Especially your parents, your grandparents, the deceased one. Whatever facial you can recall, you visualize them, then you read it. Then you add in this word. In whatever rhyme of existence they may be, may they all to be well and happy. Well, you can do it, don't worry. There is no such thing as dead already, you cannot find them at all. No. They may take another form of mind through rebirth, but the coming form of mind still continue. This is philopiety. This is metta. So you can do it. Then after that, having radiated thought of metta, in an orderly way, as mentioned, then they can continue. There is oneself, meditation teacher, other people whom you respect. One should now visualize one by one, one's dear one, beginning with the member of one family, and surface one and abandon rays of spiritual love. Then charity begins at home. If one cannot love one's own people, loving others would be academic. So that's why you start with your loved ones and all those things. Then after that, you extend to people who are like neutral. Then your enemy and all those things. Then people whom you dislike. If you can do that, means your metta is good already. Then having radiated metta, the thought force of love on everyone, in the neutral side, one should visualize people whom one has disliked, hostility, prejudice, or even temporarily misunderstanding. As one visualizes disliked one to each one of them, one must mentally repeat, I have no hostility towards him or her, and he or she also not have any hostility towards me. May he or she be well and happy, well and happy. Thus, as one visualizes the person of different circle, one breaks the barrier caused by dislike, attachment, hatred, envy, jealousy. When one is able to regard an enemy without ill will and love, one has for a very dear one, it is then that metta acquires a sublime impartiality, elevating the consciousness as if in a spiritual movement in ever widening circle until the mind becomes completely all-embracing. Then they continue with a lot of other instruction. Then the method two is more complete. This one is, I think, involving the full extent of metta. Then they also have the chanting, Sabbe Satta and all those things, Aviraho too. So this one is from the Metta Sutta. Then the third method is the universal. Universal radiation of metta. Radiation in general way, radiation in specific way, and radiation of the directional way. So the directional way is the 10 direction. Then also to the 10 type of beings, I remember. So all this, they are taught in the Metta Sutta. I hope one day, try to type it out. Type it out, then we print it out into proper one. Because this one, the writing is very small. Last time the book, I don't know why the writing is very small. Then there's another one, this one also very good. These are the two books that I have make use of. This one is also Metta Bhavana. And they are all very good. I used them in the early 80s. Then I printed them in 1987, I remember. The benefits of practicing Metta Bhavana also here, all listed. Yeah. So I try to get this type out. Then if possible, I will edit a bit. Then maybe we can get it reprinted so that it can benefit people who wants to develop Metta. This is the only thing I forgot to teach most of you. because this one, I did it in the early days before I even started the cultivation. I started with Metta. And Metta is very powerful. Very powerful. So forgive me for not teaching you. Now got conditioned because of this book. So I remember these two books. So I try to get it out. Then maybe you all can make use of it. Okay. We shall end. Sadhu. 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 Okay, we will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merits. Then after that, you make your aspiration. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyantang anumoditwa chirang rakkantu lokasasana etawata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya Idang me nyatina hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatina hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatina hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Itewo asatukalena sasa sampati hetu cha. Fito bawatu loko cha. Raja bhavatu dhammiko Ipina punyang kamena Mame bala samagamo Sattang samagamo hotu Yava nivana patiya Sadhu 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 Okay, you can pay respect to Triple Gem. Then we will end. Thank you.